Healthcare and senior care is fraught with problems and challenges, but we're also seeing some amazing new clinical treatments and resources. This show will help illuminate and uncover the good, bad, and the ugly in order to equip patients, families, and other healthcare providers. Welcome to Senior Care Confidential.
Hey, Joe.
Hello there, Brian.
So this is a conversation that we are continuing that we started a few weeks ago on the rising cost for care for seniors. And I know you personally have had experience with this with your own mother, grandmother.
It was my grandmother. So my grandmother lived with us she was told she had 2 weeks to live on hospice. So I told her, grandmother, do you want to live with me? Honey, I would love to. So she moved in and was with us for 11 months. It was not 2 weeks. It was 11 months. Wow. I had a business, a home health agency. I had a son in high school, two in college, worked just a tremendous number of hours. We had a daytime caregiver, but at night, my grandmother wanted to save the money, not spend money wholesale working, because I owned a home care agency. We could have provided caregivers at night, at cost, mm-hmm. but she did not want to do that. She did not want to spend the money. So I was the nighttime caregiver. Some nights I got up as much as three times a night, but each time I got up was at least 20 minutes, getting her from the hospital bed to the wheelchair, wheeling her to the bathroom, having her take her time, brush her teeth, wash her hands, get back in the wheelchair, back to bed. Then once she was in bed, we'd reposition and, honey, tell me about this. And you know what? I need a Kleenex. Will you get me a Kleenex? Honey, would you run? It was always at least, it was at least 30 minutes. And then I'm a light sleeper, so I couldn't always fall back asleep. So it truly affected my work. And luckily I own the business. So if I needed to come in a little late, I could, or, leave early. But think about those that have a high power as physician or a position, even an executive assistant who that executive relies on.
Sure.
And she's running late because mom's caregiver was late or she's exhausted.
Well, and you are in a unique position as well because you know some things about caring for elderly patients, know some things about caring for people with, dementia or Alzheimer's. And because you come from the industry and you happen to be the business owner itself, like you actually had some cards stacked in your favor where a lot of people don't have that.
I did, but I'll tell you what, it was a learning experience. One night, my husband and I went out to dinner. We got locked out of the house. Caregiver would not answer the phone. We literally, 45 minutes, could not get in the house. She had everything locked, deadbolted. Wouldn't answer her phone. I think she was asleep. It was like 10:30. So we had a lot of bad situations.
So even you struggled with this.
Absolutely. So I understand, through the customer's eyes, it's hard. It's hard on the family. It's hard on the patient. It's hard on the business. And so we have a great guest today, Jenny Knutson, who is going to be talking about just this. Tell us what you're with the Alzheimer's Association. Tell us what you do.
Yes. Oh, thank you so much. I actually work in senior care as well. And I volunteer quite a lot with the Alzheimer's Association because I have found their mission to be so worthwhile to put my extra time into. One of the things that I do a lot of with the Alzheimer's Association is public policy and advocacy. As a part of the board, we're afforded many opportunities to go and talk to our representatives to make some of the changes that are needed right now for all of the caregivers that are at home taking care of people with Alzheimer's and dementia. And that is a lot of people right now.
Yeah, you're mentioning some statistic about 12 and 24 million or 6 and 12 million.
Oh,
how many active patients right now, active seniors?
Yeah. So there are 6 million people affected by Alzheimer's or dementia right now in the United States.
Okay.
On average, it's going to be about 2 people that are having to take care of that person that has Alzheimer's and dementia. Wow. They have some role or duty.
And this is unpaid care. This is not including the paid caregivers. This is family members, friends, neighbors, church. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yep. Absolutely. It takes a whole community in order to do it.
Well, and Jenny, what I'm finding, because I work with families as a care manager, mm-hmm. people just keep increasing the cost at these communities. I mean, some of them are up to $14,000 a month for care.
Yeah.
How does the average person afford this? You know, I mean, really, you know, how does the, and I get, you know, this is that catastrophic time these people save for, and, but it's just astronomical. I mean, who would have thought 50 years ago, you know, when I turn 70, you know, I'll have X amount saved. Well, $15,000, $14,000 a month goes very quickly. So that's why the option is, the cheapest option is having family care and then being at home. But look at the cost. What is it costing your work? What's it costing your family? You know, I know for the 11 months my grandmother lived with us, it was the most stressful thing on my husband and our marriage. We've been married over 35 years. It was so stressful. My grandmother gave us no privacy at all. And, you know, if I just wanted to have a cup of coffee in the kitchen by myself with my Bible, doing a little Bible study, she would always have the caregiver wheel her in to see what was going on, what was wrong. And, you know, it's hard.
It is. It absolutely is.
So we're talking about the caregiver, that the family member that is caring for a loved one. And so say she does, he or she does the day shift and somebody else does the night shift. They're missing out on a full-time job. Mm-hmm. You know, they're missing out on income. Mm-hmm. And that senior, you know, a lot of the seniors now live through the Depression. And so the senior doesn't think, oh, wow, you know, electricity bills are now $300, and they're not thinking, oh, my grandson is losing out on this. She's thinking, well, my grandson is taking care of me because that's what family does.
Right.
So it's hard. It's, no matter how you slice it, it's hard.
What is the Alzheimer? I know you're on the public policy side of things. Mm-hmm. What is the Alzheimer's Association doing with, in terms of public policy, to help with these statistics and these families that are struggling?
Right now, what we're trying to do is get more and more resources for them. And one of those is education. Okay. The biggest thing right now to help is getting people educated on the signs of Alzheimer's and dementia, knowing what they are so they can start early on, getting that early detection. And it takes a lot of work to get policies put into place, to get Medicare to jump onto some of the training as well for the physicians that are out there. Mm. A lot of the physicians are not comfortable even talking about Alzheimer's and dementia.
Why is that?
I don't know. You know what? I think
But you guys are finding that as an organization.
Yeah, it's a commonality.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know what, though? I've talked, you know, my son's a physician, and he grew up in the home of a hospice nurse. And so he is very comfortable talking with patients and at the bedside and talking about the pros versus the con, and that you always have an option. But not every doctor is comfortable doing that.
Well, think about it. There's not a cure to offer. All right. So how would you
There's not a cure to offer, but there is.
There are some solutions.
There are things that can help to slow it, especially if you catch it when it's mild impairment versus as it advances. Is that correct?
There is hope out there for that. The new medications that have been approved are amyloid fighting. And in that sense, they are showing really good signs. I believe it's about 12%. You have to go to alz.org to get the exact number, but I believe it's 12% are actually seeing a slowdown or a halt in the progression.
And the amyloids are the plaques that develop in the brains because of Alzheimer's.
Well, the plaques are going to be plaques you can kind of think of. I once had it described to me as the plaques are like firewood.
Okay.
Right? And so the firewood's just going to sit there, right? If it's there. And the amyloids are like the match.
Got it.
That's going to light that pile of wood on fire and start to cause it to progress. So they're finding right now in this newest class of drugs that are amyloid fighting is a good way to keep that fire from spreading.
Gotcha. What are some other things when they have mild cognitive impairment that they can be doing? If they get it diagnosed early enough, what other things can they be doing outside of more the traditional medication side of things that can be helpful in prolonging the disease process?
Oh, absolutely. So one of the best things to do is take care of your brain and your body. Okay. And this can go for people that have already been diagnosed with it, or people like you and me right now that maybe want to prevent it down in the long run, you know?
Yes.
So what's good for your heart is good for your brain. Okay. I believe about 30% of your blood actually flows from your heart up to your brain and back down and around. So that oxygenates your brain. Mm-hmm. So one of the best things they're seeing right now as the possibility for preventing is taking care of your body and your brain, healthy lifestyles, healthy eating habits, eating less fat, more protein, kind of Greek Mediterranean diets is a lot of what they're seeing.
I don't know if it's fair to say there's been a growing trend, but at least of the people who I follow who are all these anti-aging folks, it seems to be that there's a common theme that runs through a lot of these the diagnoses that we get as we age, you know, the chronic illnesses, be it cancers or be it diabetes or be it Alzheimer's or some other forms of dementia, that they're attributing a lot of that stuff to a metabolic problem. So the nutrition that we are or that we are not taking in seems to be a huge contributing factor to what things we may deal with, including Alzheimer's. Mm-hmm. So they're finding that is legit.
It is a new and exciting world in research right now, Brian. So you will find researchers saying that they have found the key to solving it all over the place, okay?
Right.
The good news is you do have organizations like the Alzheimer's Association that you can go to and look through their research and know that has been verified.
They're vetting
it. The research has been vetted, and it is going to be more accurate than a lot of the fun posts that we see come through social media that says, there's a test now. You're going to know you have it. We can fix it right now.
This week, eggs good. Next week, eggs bad.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. So,
but the Alzheimer's Association is finding that the nutritional side of things is very important in slowing the progression, even with mild cognitive impairment.
I don't know about the official slowing of the progression, but it is definitely always going to help with any of the symptoms that are coming.
It seems like that Mediterranean diet is great for everything, just for good health and wellness and well-being. You know, high protein, low fat, lots of fruits and vegetables. Yeah. I mean, stuff we already know.
And then add in your cardio exercise. Cardio exercise is something that they are also finding very important in keeping that health the way it needs to be. Yep,
that and strength training.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Balance and strength training. Because of all the synapses that need to be firing in the brain, it helps to keep the brain healthier.
So how do you know all of this, by the way?
Know all of what?
All of this information that you're giving
us. I've been around for a little while. Yeah. I actually used to teach some classes on Alzheimer's dementia.
How did you learn to teach them?
How did I learn to teach them? Trial and error and practice. Okay. Lots of failure.
A lot of studying. A lot of education, right? So when we get back to our original topic here of what it's costing, whether it's the caregivers themselves in the homes or whether it's businesses that are being affected right now, a lot of what we're finding is it's so much more expensive because of sometimes the education that people have or do not have, or the ability or the knowledge to know how to go and get that information, right? So that's where we need to be doing educationals out in the communities very frequently so people do know how to reach out. And a lot of times that comes back to income. Okay. So when we're getting back to the dollars, a lot of people don't have the money to have maybe quite the kind of education you've had, so that you know how to go and study, so that you then can go and teach, right?
Okay.
So it boils right back down to a lot of times your income, demographics, where you're from, your education can affect whether or not you're likely to be diagnosed with Alzheimer's at the same time. So financial things come back into play for that. But when you really go and you look at it for the caregiver that's at home, taking care of somebody with Alzheimer's or dementia, or they're at work, and their parents are at home or in a facility and they're taking care of somebody with Alzheimer's or dementia, when do they have time to go and learn? How do they go and learn? Do they know where to go? And can they afford to go and get some of the educations that might be out there? And that's why we do produce so many free education classes at the same time.
So you feel like one of the bigger constraints is just the education piece of it. Knowing what to look out for and then what to do.
Yeah, once. And then where to go. Where do you go for the resources at the same time? Now, one way that a lot of the businesses can be helping their employees in this manner is to offer those educational resources within their own company, especially as you were talking about with the big, big corporations. They have hundreds of employees, and they can partner with the Alzheimer's Association to offer these resources. A lot of companies are creating what's called an ERG right now. It's an employee resource group. And it can be in regards to heart health. It can be in regards to how to plan for your future through finances. It can be how to learn about Alzheimer's and dementia and what's the difference, so you know when your parents are having it or if it's regular aging. And that's something that our chapter of the association goes into companies and offers those free resources to corporate America. They can do it in small community groups as well. Imagine sitting at your desk and you are focused on a deadline. You've got a report, you've got your spreadsheets out, you're going, you're really honing in on it, right? You're all good with it. But Brian, ring, 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 ring. You're getting a phone call. Mm-hmm. Honey, I can't find the remote control. And it's your mama. Oh, I found it, but I don't know which button. And I say this in jest. I'm not trying to take away dignity.
I get it as their PT.
Yes. So it's a very common thing, yeah. But it is that most important thing for them right now because they don't have anything else that they're doing at home.
Their world is small.
Yes. And so when they can't find that, they're going to call you and it's going to be urgent. You've got this responsibility though with the spreadsheet going. But how do you stop the phone from ringing? I've had some people that I've worked with, they have neighbors on call that are also at home, and they will call their neighbor and say, "Mom is really having an anxiety attack right now because she cannot find the remote control. Would you please go over and help her do that?" And that's where, again, the community of the friends and family comes in handy. I had one resident, when I was working in senior living, that their family, before they moved them in, when they were living at home, they would have a neighborhood network. So when their dad would leave the house to go on a walk, each neighbor, if they saw him, they knew if he was walking in the right direction to go back home or not, because they knew what he was doing. And if they saw him walking a different direction, then they were on alert. But this wife had to go and talk with all of her neighbors about it and ask for their help in that sense. So if you don't have resources like that with people that are already at home to help you watch out, you're doing it all by phone. Now let's add in teenage kids that got soccer practice, doctor's appointments, or that the braces appointments are so frequent, right? So people will often have to juggle and struggle, and their work can be affected by that. And that means the employer's business is being affected by that, right? And that means the economy is being affected by that. It has such a downwind effect, regardless of whether you are taking care of somebody at your house yourself, or whether you're working a job and taking care of them, or they're even in a facility. Being in senior living, one of the most common things that happens is somebody has a fall. All right, so we're gonna triage, assess, see if we need to call 911. We may call 911. The next call is going to be to the family. If it's your mom or dad, you're going to kind of be like, "Oh my gosh, I have to get to the hospital. Like right now, I have to get to the hospital." And you're going to walk out that door. And your employer's going to be either very understanding and be able to jump in and take care of it, or they're going to be like, "This cannot keep happening." You know, and your job could be affected in that sense. So literally 6 out of 10 caregivers, somebody that's watching out for a loved one with Alzheimer's or dementia, have their employment either change or affected in some way or another. 6 out of 10 of these. So, you know, providing those resource groups, having a little flexibility are a couple of the ways that these companies can help. But I mean, when you're running a hospital or a doctor's office and one of your staff's affected and having to run out, there's nobody else watching these other seniors now. And as you were talking about, staffing can be very hard right now, and to get people to come in and cover last minute can be quite a struggle. So now it's affecting the lives of other people. So some people can have that flexibility and say, you know what, leave early, go take care of it. Maybe sit down with your computer at home tonight and maybe finish off this report. You know, you can send it to me just before you go to bed tonight. Sometimes that's possible. And when that is, it is a big deal that the employers help and do that. It will make such a big effect in retaining their staff as well and not having that turnover expense.
Well, I know so many churches now, the bigger churches in Dallas, we're very fortunate here that we do have big churches with big senior ministries, ministers to the senior population. Yeah. And many are doing daycare. Mm-hmm. They're doing, you know, like a daughter's day out, yes, which is great. So there are options out there. You know, I know they're trying to, couple of the churches in Dallas have amazing daughter's day out programs, mm-hmm, and other churches are trying to replicate that. So that's one thing to give a caregiver a break. What else do you think would be good as far as giving a break to the family?
You know what? A lot of different senior living communities also offer respite programs. And that is where it's, I hate to describe it as a hotel, but basically you're going to go and stay in a room at an assisted living, or if appropriate, if the advancement is there, in a memory care. You know your loved one's getting fed, they're getting their hygiene taken care of, they are having activities and social interactions, and they're staying overnight there.
We're going to call it a cruise ship. On land.
Yes, but yes. Isn't the respite?
All the activities, I mean,
only without
all
the unlimited
food,
alcohol, yeah. Okay?
It used to be, though, yeah, people could try places and respite for 3 to 5 days. Mm-hmm. And what I've found now as a care manager, that really the minimum is 30 days.
You might be surprised. You really might be surprised, especially if you're looking into the memory cares. If it's going to be a longer stay that they're requiring, more often than not, it's because they don't have a lot of rooms available. And so if you're going to tie up one of their rooms, they're going to want to make sure that it's financially also a benefit to them. Because, you know, in senior living, just as well as other businesses in our world, many of them are for profit.
So what do you do for this patient that is adamant she wants to stay at home? Caregivers are burnt out. Family is doing, let's say, half of the work. What do you recommend? You know, if someone were to call in and say, I don't know what to do, I'm exhausted. Mm-hmm. You know, I have no time off. I go to work, come home and take care of mom.
Yeah. My first question ends up being, who's helping you right now? And I want to identify who their typical go-to person is. Have you notified them that right now, right this minute, you are struggling and you need them to come to you right now? Have you done that yet? And we're going to find that out first, because we need to take care of that moment of panic that they're having. It is a serious issue with caregivers' health that comes along with all of this responsibility. And I'm not just talking about physically being spent, blood pressure, cholesterol going up, you know, things from stress, but there's also 58% of caregivers taking care of somebody with Alzheimer's or dementia end up with some sort of an emotional, sometimes even suicidal ideations. I believe it's 18%. Of caregivers have at some point suicidal ideations because they feel like they're hitting a brick wall. And mm-hmm, how does this do?
Because it's never going
to
end.
This disease, it will never get better. All they have to look forward to is worse, worse, worse. You know, when you have breast cancer, you have prostate cancer. Well, maybe not prostate, but breast cancer. You know, you've got something you can go and get treatment for. You mm-hmm have chemotherapy. You have people encouraging you to fight this disease, beat this disease. There's no beating this one.
Right.
So the one that's in this fight is actually the caregiver. Mm-hmm. It is not the person as affected by it.
And we've had numerous cases that we've worked with where the caregiver actually passed away prior to our actual patient.
It's very common.
Because the burnout was so severe. And we try to get them, you know, and by the time we're getting to them, oftentimes it's too late. Like the caregivers are too far gone and we're getting caregiver support in there and getting family members to come in and help. But they've been dealing with, at that point, for so many years, their body and their psyche is starting to fail.
You know, and so much of that is because of, again, finances and being able to take them somewhere or feeling guilty about taking them somewhere for help. But I will tell you too, that so many people I talk to just want to hang on as long as they can to their loved one. And they feel like there's a stigma to taking them to a facility or a community. But really having those additional resources and places that are available is what will also ultimately help that person that is in between the sandwich generation, like you were just talking about. That is what will help them be able to continue with their employment and not disrupting their workplace quite as much as well. And ultimately, maybe stabilize the economy as we go through this next crisis. Because by 2050, all right, so 26 more years, one out of every four people between Europe and the United States will be over the age of 65.
Wow.
One out of four.
Not having babies enough.
I know.
No. Not having babies enough. Mm-hmm. And so
for the younger generation,
this will become something more and more prevalent because this disease affects people mostly over the age of 65.
Right. And there's not, because of the caregiver burden, two for one, there's not enough coming behind to help with that stuff. So that, I think that's also where we're going to have some challenges in 2050 as well. Well,
that's why we're at now. Now is the innovative time. Right now is when we get to recreate how we're going to help our employees.
Is Congress or the states, are they looking at different ways outside of the medication things? Are they looking at different ways to help reduce some of the caregiver burnout and some of the caregiver strain and financial? Because I know Medicare is just, it's an insurance company. So they don't usually cover like the convalescent care is like caregiver help. Are they looking at different ways to start offering this kind of stuff? Or are they just like, no, we're an insurance company and you guys are on your own?
You know, right now I'm not aware of any that provides specific financial means to people in the sense of a Medicare program, you know, outside of if you qualify for Medicaid, then you could go into a facility using Medicaid. But for people that don't quite qualify for Medicaid, but maybe don't have money to pay $11,000 a month, you know, that's where they become the in-betweeners and they really get stuck. And that's again why the average income is going to be around $50,000 of somebody that's stuck in this spot. They don't have enough money to pay for the big place. They don't have little enough money to get the assistance from the government.
Which is what we talked about a couple weeks ago, which is it's that squeezed in middle income, middle net worth.
Well, I have a patient whose wife passed away with dementia and he's got very mild dementia. He is a veteran and he is getting veterans benefits. And there's a new benefit that pays pretty well. And I don't know the specifics on it, but you know, if you are a veteran, you know, there are some services there.
Yes.
And, you know, I think people, you know, I bring up the church just because I'm active in my church, but churches need to be aware of this financial burden and maybe have a volunteer, you know, like hospices have volunteer programs and you can get a volunteer to come for 4 hours a day. They can't do anything hands-on, but maybe start some kind of a volunteer program where they can just give the caregiver some relief. Maybe the caregiver can't leave, but the caregiver can go take a nap while they're sitting watching a movie with them. You know,
and some churches have what they call the Stevens Ministry. I know one church does, and they send people out to visit shut-ins and to assist or into communities or facilities that service people with Alzheimer's and dementia as well. And it can be replicated so easily, y'all. And again, the churches, like you're saying, are almost a common sense place that you would want to go to ask for support and help. And they can set those things up so easily, but we can also help because the Alzheimer's Association has the programs to give them so they don't have to recreate them and they can help each one. So any of the people that are watching your podcast, if they have a connection with a church or a community center or a civic group, they can reach out to the ALZ.org and be able to request assistance. And they can be a big instrument in making those happen.
That's awesome.
I don't know that there's statistics on this, but I would imagine, because Joe, you and I have dealt with patients with this before, I would imagine that there is a significant percentage of seniors or folks who are getting older that have sneaking suspicions that they're starting to decline in terms of their cognition. Uh-huh. But because of, you mentioned the stigma, sometimes it's like better if I don't. For me, I'd rather know everything. But for some people, like, I don't want that. I just don't want to know, mm-hmm. if I have that. What are some signs outside of like, I misplaced my keys, because that happens. Like, yeah. What are some of the telltale signs for early insights or early notification for the mild cognitive impairment, so that if we see these certain things, now let's go get tested and get confirmation so that we can do lifestyle changes or add medications or whatever the case may be to help maybe bump this out a little.
Absolutely. Further. Change in routine that is abnormal is something that can trigger a little bit of it. Okay.
An example.
But then, say somebody is first up in the morning and they're going to go straight to their coffee and they're going to get in their car and head to work, or they're going to go work out for 4 hours. And you start to see not just a lack of desire, because some of us suddenly don't want to exercise one morning, right? Mm-hmm. So it's not a lack of desire, but it's more that they don't remember that that's a part of their norm anymore or why they're not going out.
I didn't think about it. You know, repeating yourself. Mm-hmm. I know with my mother, you know, we knew something was wrong. She told the same stories over and over again. Then she started wearing the same clothes and stopped showering. And we'd have to remind her to shower. And so we saw all these signs. Mm-hmm. But my stepfather just was not ready to put a label on it, you know. Yep. And so you want to be respectful. And I think that's one thing with adult children. You know, it's hard for adult children to say, Dad, something is wrong with Mom. You know, let's get her to the doctor. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't want to rock the boat. Yep. You know, they don't want to disrespect their elders. But it is
it's a
family disease. It affects everybody.
It does.
Financially, emotionally. So
routines.
Okay,
what else?
Some of the other things are like post-it notes, okay? Imagine post-it notes everywhere. A lot of people in aging have post-it notes, okay? Like my mom, at one point, she doesn't do this anymore because she's heard I use this example in trainings. So now she stays away from it. But post-it notes all over to remind her that she needs to go pick up this medicine, or she needs to get eggs at the grocery store, and post-it notes all over.
Like all over the house, just on the desk.
No, not just on the desk.
Okay.
But this is the thing. She's just got regular aging. You want to know how I know? Mm. Every one of the post-it notes say something different. So when you start to see numerous notes that are all of the same thing, then you need to have a little bit of a concern and a conversation. I had a resident once that she had her little desk in her room, and any kind of scratch paper she had, she would write 3 phone numbers on. She was never going to forget those phone numbers. It was very important to her that she remembered her 3 daughters' phone numbers by memory. Mm. And yet she didn't have a phone she could call them on. But she needed to remember those 3 phone numbers. So she'd write them down and stick them up with tape or the post-it note, stick it on the walls. And then they're on the desk, literally probably 75 different types of paper and post-it notes and stuff all over the one area with those 3 numbers. Because she couldn't understand or realize that she's already written these 3 down right here. Mm-hmm. So she needed to again.
It tells you too, though, just that she's thinking about her kids she loves her kids and they're so special. That's mm-hmm. what's important.
They are vital.
I find that sweet.
It is very sweet.
Yep.
Yeah.
So Jenny, if someone wanted to get in touch with you to learn more about the Alzheimer's Association, if they were a company that wanted to look at the ERGs to work with y'all, what's the best way to get in touch with you?
ALZ.org. Go and fill out a request for help or call the 800 number for Alzheimer's. And in doing that, just tell them where you're located, who you're with, or if you're just an individual, even that's the cool thing. Even if it's just you, Brian, that was up in the middle of the night and you cannot get your parent that has Alzheimer's to stop pacing back and forth from one end to the other, or to stop flicking at something or picking at something, doing some sort of behavior, you can call that phone number and you'll get a live person right away, even in the middle of the night.
I did not know that.
And they will give you some ideas to try right then in real time. And then if it doesn't work, you call them back. They give you another one. And then they'll advise you if this is something that, hey, maybe you should call for bigger help right now because that behavior is getting a little dangerous.
Interesting.
You know, so they're available 24/7.
Okay. What about, one more question. Mm-hmm. Those patients, and I hear this from families, you know, mom is so confused and she's not taking her medicine. She's doing but we get to the doctor and she is on her best behavior. And, oh, yes, I feel great. Mm-hmm. And, yes, I take my medicine. Yes. I am sleeping 8 hours a night when they're pacing the floors at night. What do you say to that family?
Oh, my goodness. So 15 minutes is easy to fake. Okay. It is so easy to fake. And when we grow to doctors from young age all the way till now, they're a little bit of a sign of authority. You want them to think you're doing the right things, right? That you're not eating all the junk food. You're not just laying around all the time. You're exercising. You want them to think that you're doing everything right. So it's already built into our muscle memory that we want to impress the doctor, that our numbers are going to be good. And so they can go in and absolutely easily fake 15 minutes, but doctors don't have much longer than that. One of the things that the association has advocated for is some more education about care planning for physicians. There is a CMS or a Medicare code where physicians can bill Medicare for care planning. As of 2 years ago, when we started advocating for this, and we did get it passed, only 1% of physicians knew that that code existed.
Wow.
Yeah. And so while it's there and they could be charging for it and therefore feeling like they can spend a little more time, or somebody in their office can, they just didn't know about it. And so we fought to require CMS to educate doctors on that. And that was passed and is happening now. But some still don't know because it takes some time. Take some time.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Very
thank
good.
You, Jenny, so much.
You're
this
welcome.
Has been great. This
thank
has been
you for
awesome.
Having me.
And thank you for all this information, and we appreciate you.
Yep. Yeah. Thank you very much.
All right.
Bye,
welcome.
Joe.
Bye, Brian. Have a good week.